go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Deep Space High, Sci-Fi TV Review Podcast, where we break down the latest and the not-so-greatest from today's sci-fi television. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
You see what I did there?
No, I didn't.
Before we started recording, you were talking about how I do my radio voice.
Oh, yeah, you did it.
From a normal voice.
Yeah, I noticed. I just thought you were trying to do something even weirder. I thought maybe like doing an impression or something. I don't know.
No, it was just my radio voice, because before we started recording, you were giving me a hard time about how I changed my normal voice and put on my audio voice when I do the intro.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the intro. It's like anytime you're about to make a point, you kind of do it. It's really weird. I don't know. It was something that I noticed like just beforehand, like one of those glass shattering moments. You know, it's like, oh shit, yeah. You do this all the fucking time, and I just notice it.
It's one of those things when I listen back at the edit, it sometimes I sound monotone or bored. So I try to put in some spice in there so I don't sound bored, because I'm not bored, but I sound bored, and I don't want the listeners to get bored because they're listening to us to help them go to sleep, because sometimes I sound boring. Trying to make it sound more energetic.
Yeah, but this is perfect. What you're doing right now, you're just having a good tone throughout the conversation rather than trying to, like, fake it with the
Then we get into Star Trek and it's like, well, I don't understand what they're doing here and blah blah blah.
Well, yeah, but there are times where I think they don't understand what they're doing there, so it's not just you.
True. So anything exciting going on?
No, nothing whatsoever, just studying. I pretty much spent my entire spring break studying. I mean, we did have one day to where me and my dad snuck off and played golf, but that's about it.
Nice.
Oh, it was a total accident. We were trying to just go to like the range because it was like 72 degrees out, perfect weather,
and then you ended up playing.
Well, no, we get there at like 4:30 and the guy's like, yeah, we're closing early. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, we gotta mow the lawn, we gotta mow the range, we gotta pick up all the balls, we can't have balls otherwise I'll fuck up the mower, and yeah, so we're closing early, but you can go play if you guys want, we'll give you a discount. I'm like, oh, fuck it. Dad's playing. Me and Dad are in Dad's in jeans. I'm in basketball shorts. We weren't planning on playing. They're just like, all right, go ahead. And then we just ended up fucking around the entire course. So
sounds about right.
Yeah, it was so fun. But what about you? What's been going on with you?
No, nothing. Not. And then I had to make sure my audio wasn't all screwed up, because in last episode it was, for some reason, my microphone that I use was hooked up, but we were recording through Zencastr, which is the site that we kind of do a Zoom call on, it was picking it up from my laptop. So I was like, I played with that and I had to edit our last episode. And I was like, man, there's some good content here, but I don't like my audio. But we stuck with it. And, you know, it sounds better this time, because we did a test recording before we started recording, because I am not letting bad audio slip through again.
Yeah, that was weird, because I noticed it right as we were about to start the show, and then before I had the chance to say anything, you had already started, and I didn't notice that you were doing the, you know, the silent countdown, the 3, 2, 1. So I'm like, oh fuck, I can't say anything now because we already started. And then
you should have, because I would have stopped it and we would have started right over if you would have said my audio's off.
Well, it was one of those things to where it was like, it was kind of off, but then it kind of picked up as we were going through. So it was like, okay, maybe I was just hearing something, but then I kind of noticed it once the mic did get back to normal. I was like, oh shit, no, there was a clear difference there. So
yeah, and I think like what you were hearing was coming through my mic, but what was being recorded was being through the computer. So, but we have that issue fixed now. We're not going to let that happen again.
Yeah,
because like I said, I feel bad about putting out shitty audio quality, but I think there was some good content there. That's why we didn't want to re-record.
Oh, I know, that was one of our better episodes.
So yeah, I know, it's super disappointing that it came out with my shitty audio on my end. So yeah, it is what it is. It'll get better. We will have good episodes, hopefully, knock on wood. And I guess we can go ahead and get into it, since we Yeah, we've already ran almost 5 minutes.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it!
I'm gonna go do it!
All right, so what do we got in store for this week's episode?
So, on this week's episode of Deep Space High, we are talking about Season 3 of Star Trek Discovery, something Chris and I have yet to watch yet. It came out in October of 2020, episode 1 being The Hope Is You Part 1, and episode 2 being Far From Home. So,
pretty sure they stole that title from Spider-Man, but okay.
It's a pretty common phrase, I'm sure.
Yeah, I guess so.
So, we'll go ahead and jump into the season premiere. Now, it starts out with a pretty cool dogfight, a futuristic dogfight. You see two guys just duking it out in some space debris. Some of it looks like Federation ships, and Brenham comes through the wormhole and collides with one of them Iron Man style, breaking the F-22's wing and making both of them crash land. Like that reference? You like?
Yeah, it wasn't bad. So, I actually thought the same thing as I was watching it.
I didn't. I actually thought of it right now as I was describing the scene.
Oh, really?
Huh. And I saw the correlation. I mean, I did watch this at like 1 o'clock in the morning last night.
I watched it this morning, so okay. But I mean, it's it was an interesting scene. It was
a good start.
It was a little bit more realistic than Iron Man, because when Iron Man crashes, he just gets up, brushes it off like it's nothing, or at least Brenham's like disoriented, puking, and just like out of it. So
yeah, it's weird. Iron Man must have some sort of inertial dampeners, but that's a conversation for another day.
Or, you know, it's just bad plot hole.
No, could be.
You never know.
Could be, but I think this episode gets off to a decent start. I mean, I didn't mind that opening scene where she comes in, crash lands, and is kind of lost, and it's just trying to make sure that their plan worked, because if she jumped into the future and their plan didn't even work, and then
It's a pretty quick, you know, right off the bat, hey, it worked. Because how do I know? Well, you ran into a ship right as you go back to the future.
Yeah, but she still asked her Red Angel 2.0 suit to run a scan of the planet and see if there's any life signs, and there was.
Yeah, but I mean yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess it could have just been space debris that she ran into. But then again, what are the odds that right as she opens up the wormhole, there just so happens to be a ship with a guy running directly into the path of the wormhole, directly able to run into a human, you know, 3 meters tall, and all this vastness of space and time.
3 meters?
Or not even 3 meters. I guess only like
a meter and a half.
Yeah.
2 meters, maybe.
Yeah. Well, we're U.S. standard. We don't use the metric system here. Or what's the continental system? What's it called? Our system?
The standard, whatever.
Yeah, continental standard, some shit like that. But yeah, I mean, you get all this vastness. What are the odds of that? And I just know that they're going to take this dude and build a new love relationship with Burnham, because why the fuck not? They've been doing love relationships over the past two seasons. So
yeah, she's always got to be, you know, banging somebody.
Yeah. I feel like they're just trying to do all these romance relationship storylines just to make it have some kind of character development, because I mean that's the only kind of relationship these people seem to have.
Yeah, apparently. And I screwed up. I said that was the opening scene when that was not the opening scene.
No, it was not. The opening scene was actually to a bird alarm clock, which I thought that's an interesting alarm clock.
Yeah, I thought I was expecting when it turned 8 it would just do like some sort of bird noises or something, and
yeah,
I think it just kind of made a typical alarm clock noise and then disappeared, which it was interesting seeing that scene, that it was pretty much his room was an entire hologram.
Well, I don't think those were hologram.
Well, hologram-esque.
It seemed like it, but when it was something that I noticed in episode 2. Well, I don't want to say that I didn't notice, but they kind of explained in episode 2, kind of to jump around a little bit, but they talked about programmable matter.
Yeah, so and that's what it is. But I was just kind of saying hologram to
simplicity's
sake. We could have got into that programmable matter later.
Yeah, but I think that's what it was. Maybe not a hologram, but just programmable matter. Maybe that really was a bird alarm clock just with programmable matter. I mean, it is 1,000 years into the future.
Could have been. Could have been. I didn't see it like that. I saw the bird as, I don't know. I saw it more as a hologram, but yeah, it is programmable matter. But
well, that's what I thought at first too. But
it's weird that you can program living beings. Like,
not really. You can do it with holograms. I mean, holograms are just the projections, like the transporter technology, and then you have artificial, you know, kind of
right. But it's artificial. It's a hologram. With programmable matter, it's you're programming matter to take the shape of this being. So is it a real bird that has been churned in from this programmable matter into a real bird, or is it a hologram bird that is not really existent, but it can appear and disappear as an alarm clock?
Could be. But then again, you know, what's it called? Replicator technology is able to replicate meat and dead animals. Maybe over, you know, another 600 years of technological development, they are able to use programmable matter to create living life forms.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
I mean, they can create.
Fair point.
I don't know if it was in this episode. It may have been the next one. No, it was in the next one because it was on Discovery. But they have cellular regeneration chambers, which can, you know, reheal or regrow cellular DNA. So, I mean, it doesn't seem beyond the realm of possibility that, you know, they would be able to reach that level of technology.
Yeah. And it was really, I was more intrigued with the start of this episode and to find out more about this, this guy who was sleeping by himself and really got up and had a Starfleet. It was a little box, like a 12-inch by 6-inch box, with something in it. And he sat at a desk and pretty much stared at a wall for what we find out later is pretty much every day, and has not talked to anybody in a long time, it seems like.
Yeah. And then,
but I was very intrigued. I was very curious, and I was glad that we got some sort of conversation with him at the end of the episode, which we could talk about when we get towards the end of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very intrigued with that. And really, after the when she crash lands, it was hard not looking at my phone. And that's kind of how I judge some of these episodes that we watch, especially for the first time. It's like, am I tempted to look at my phone? And I definitely did a couple times during this episode, because it just, there's some interesting parts, but I wasn't interested overall.
Oh, during this episode?
Yeah.
I actually thought it wasn't that bad. I thought it was.
Oh, I mean, I didn't like it at all. Like, you know, she has back problems. She could hardly get up and walk after crash landing, which makes sense. You take a hard landing, and then she walks all the way to this guy ship, who we find out his name is Book. Walks all the way there, gets there, and then is able to have a fight with a bad back. I was like, really? If your back's, I mean, adrenaline kicks in, but does it kick in that much to where you could have a full-fledged fight a couple hours after crash landing? I don't think so.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
So it was just like, and that was some of the things that pulled me out. Now, we know she didn't have any medical kits or anything, or maybe she had a nerve blocker, so she wasn't able to feel it, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly, I didn't notice that part. Believe it or not.
Yeah, I did, and it bugged me. I was like, unless she was on some sort of nerve blocker, it didn't make sense. Her back seemed like it was pretty jacked up.
Mm. Well, I mean, I thought it was a little annoying because the guy's name was what, Book?
Yeah.
He kept asking questions at the beginning when they first met, and then he kept saying, "I don't want to know the answer to." It's just like, why does every question, it's like, oh, well, why do you have this or why do you have that? I don't want to know the answer. It's like, dude, then why do you fucking answer asking the question?
Well, it's one of those things, and it's one of those things, I see your point, you know, why are you asking questions you don't want to know the answer to? Then again, I've been in his shoes. I've asked questions. I was like, what the fuck were you thinking? And I'm like, you know what? Never mind. The less I know, the better. And then I'll continue and I'll ask, like, how did this happen? And then you'll be like, you know, never mind. And I've done it, and maybe not as many questions as him, but definitely.
But they're two or three, but they're good logical questions. It's like, okay, that's a question you probably should be asking. Then why don't you want to know the answer? Unless he knows that he shouldn't know the answer, because he probably suspects, you know, it is time travel. But I guess not, since he didn't.
Yeah, it's probably one of those things. You know, I can't think of her name, but the female engineer that we are introduced to at the start of the second season, who was on the Hiawatha and kind of saved her crew, or at least several members of her crew.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember her name either, but I know who you're.
The one that always had butts heads with Stamens. You know, there was a scene in the second episode where there's a guy in a hazmat suit scooping up the remains of Leland. And she's talking to Stammons, and, you know, she references that guy, and the guy's like, "My name's Gene." And she goes, I already forgot that. It's like he was trying to have that attitude, but, you know, still asking the questions and kind of contradicting that "I don't really give a shit" attitude.
Yeah. And I noticed that throughout the episode that they were just a little bit. It seems like every season they're trying to add more and more humor, because there's a lot more humorous situations as we keep going through it. And I was laughing my ass off. I mean, kind of skipping ahead, when they get to the Orion Syndicate and they spray that powder on Burnham, or the spray, and she gets super stoned or super high, I'm like, I'm laughing my ass off because I got stoned watching it. And I'm like, ha, she's playing that off pretty damn well, because I'd probably do the same thing, just be laughing in that awkward circumstance. And I imagined Ant-Man too in that, you know, the truth serum.
Oh, that was funny.
That's kind of the. And she didn't do it as well as what's his name.
She was playing it as. Yeah, Michael Pena did a really good job in that scene.
Yeah, but she did.
But it was almost like a mix between getting high and truth inoculant.
A little bit.
She was acting pretty freaking crazy, and when, like, her blood was flowing at 200%.
Was it that high?
No, that's just, okay. It's just me. She's pumped because she was talking super fast. So she was just, you know, she was thinking incredibly quick.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, she just could have that powerful mind, because remember, they were saying that it was taking a long time and that she was kind of resisting. So I think that was just her mental discipline from her Vulcan training fighting back a bit. So that could have been it.
I didn't like seeing her high.
I'd love that. That was funny.
You know, watching it sober compared to you, who watched it high, it didn't land for me. I found it a little annoying, and I tried to enjoy it, and it didn't hit home for me. The humor wasn't there for me.
Well, in my defense, I wasn't super high. It was just one hit, you know, taken periodically throughout the day, but. It was still funny as hell, because I know what it's like, and I've been in that kind of situation before. And, you know, there's different kinds of highs. So there are times where you're super quiet and chill, but there's times where you're just super high energy, high string. You're just talking like a million miles per hour. And it's just, especially when you're drinking coffee and you just get going, man. So it was funny because I can relate to it, and she played it off really well. Almost like she actually has experience doing it. So.
Yeah, there's something I wanted to ask. There was two people being interrogating her. One was an Andorian. What was the other species?
An Orion.
It was? Oh, yeah, he was green. Okay.
Yeah, he was an Orion. Which I did find interesting that the Orion Syndicate outlasted the Federation. Which makes sense, because they technically did predate Starfleet. They were a criminal organization which did predate Starfleet and the Federation. So they outlasted them. Good for them.
Yeah, that's like... The Yakuza will probably be around longer than some government organizations.
Yeah, but I mean, given the time frame that they say that the Federation fell, because going back a bit, they say that the year is 3188 when Burnham gets back. And they said that the Federation fell about 100 to 120 years ago. So that's 3050-ish. And the Federation was founded in around 2250. So it lasted about 800 years.
Almost, yeah.
So that's almost the span of the Roman Empire. So, I mean, that's a long time for the Federation to be around. And then for this criminal syndicate to be around, I don't know if any organization or institution's been around for that long. Oh, no, I take that back. Technically, the church has. Church has been around for 1,200 years. The Catholic Church. So maybe
churches are one thing versus. Yeah, we won't get into that.
Yeah.
So there's another point that I wanted to bring up, and you have the same point.
Mm-hmm.
Michael sends her suit back via. She does something with her suit via autopilot.
Yeah. That's why. Well, she sent it back to send the seventh signal. And then she said to self destruct it once it got there. So she couldn't go back. That's why she started screaming after she sent it.
So why couldn't they program it to jump into this destination? And it might have been, you know, they were in the middle of a war, so it might have just been easier to be in the suit. But if it was programmable to make the jump autopilot, you could have sent the ship in autopilot. And Unless unless you wanted someone to supervise the ship. This is the only thing I can think of. Because you don't want to send two autonomous ships into the future if Control has the possibility of retrieving it. So maybe you would want someone to look after the ship. That's the only reason I can think of that anybody would have to go and make the trip to the future.
No, actually, now that I think about it. So remember when Burnham's mom tried to convince her to send the data back and her go with it to safeguard it? Mm-hmm. Because if you take the data out and you're successful and the universe, you know, life exists, the data still exists where life exists, and there could still be control of, or somebody could get the data and...
That's what I just said.
Did you?
That's what I was just saying. I said the only reason I can see someone going with it is to safeguard the ship, which has the data. You don't want to send...
Yeah, but I think
the Red Angel on autopilot and then the Discovery on autopilot into the future, because then there's no one there to protect the data, which is what I was saying.
But did they have that conversation or discuss whether or not, you know, I don't know, because it's...
I don't know. I don't remember, because there was a scene where Michael was going to go by herself and then 80 people from the Discovery crew volunteered to go with her.
But it,
I don't remember it being explained why someone had to go with, if she could just send it, the Red Angel, back in time and self-destruct.
But it almost seemed like they were implying when they were going back to the future that they were going to go back to the barren wasteland where there was no life, so life couldn't get it and create a new future that they could. Not that they were going to go into the changed future to where now there's life into it. You know, I don't know if they expected there necessarily to be life. I don't know. That kind of confuses me as well.
Time travel's weird. It's a fickle bitch.
It is.
That's why I'm kind of tired, and I know I mentioned this last time or in one of the previous episodes. I'm tired of all the time travel plots. I know it's a big draw, but it's like it's so complicated because, one, you don't even know if it's possible. If it is possible, there's probably a dozen different theories on how time travel works.
Yeah. I think it is possible. I mean, I've been paying attention to a lot of scientific channels on it, and from what I can tell, we know how to do it. It's just the technological capabilities to actually do it is beyond us, you know, centuries beyond us. So,
yeah, but still, it's one of those, you know, how does it work? Is it like the Back to the Future timeline where it's a single timeline, or is it like, you know, Endgame where it's multiple timelines? So, I mean, we don't have to get into that conversation now, but because it's so complicated is why I am kind of tired of seeing some of these time travel plots.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I get why they want to do it, because there's more
it's the hot thing right now.
Well, there's more possibilities with it. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily – I think it's less it's the hot topic, more of they're just kind of running out of ideas, sticking with galactic exploration. You know, I mean, they've kind of done a lot of the same things. And it was something that I noticed with The Next Generation when re-watching the original series – the first couple seasons of Next Generation, they almost took them pretty verbatim from the original series. Didn't have a lot of creative episodes until they started getting through 4, 5, and 6. So, I don't know. Maybe they're just running out of ideas.
Maybe. But that's something I would like them to answer is, or, you know, why someone had to go with it. Probably to safeguard the data, but I would like that answer. Or if someone can tell us, if you remember, if they said something in season 2, just... find our Instagram or Facebook and shoot us a message, or hashtag Deep Space High, hashtag Tacos and Trek.
Mm-hmm. There's another thing that I noticed. There was several references to other shows, one of which was during Enterprise. That fight between Book and Burnham when she had first landed. He mentioned a quantum slipstream, which mm-hmm. actually comes from Star Trek Voyager. I don't necessarily understand the technology.
Sounds naughty.
I know, right? It kind of is. So we kind of get this because that's how the Borg uses their transportation, and it's almost like jet streams. You know how there's air currents? I don't totally understand the science of it, but it's almost like it's just essentially like currents that work through subspace as well. You know, yeah, and you kind of get in and ride through the current just like you would a jet on the airstream to kind of.
Yeah, that's why if you fly to Las Vegas, it takes longer than if you fly to Las Vegas
From Dallas.
It takes longer because you're going against the wind stream. Whereas if you're doing Vegas to Dallas, you're flying with it, so it's quicker.
Mm-hmm. By about so that's to why that's minutes,
it, at least on Earth. So you're saying there is a similar, at least according to Voyager. We don't know if there's any actual scientific proof. There could be of slipstreams in space where you kind of hop this wave and it gets you somewhere faster with less energy.
Pretty much, and there's more science to it. I don't necessarily know it, but that's but that does come from Star Trek Voyager, and I believe that's what the Borg use to transport through, you know, maintain their massive empire throughout the galaxy, because there was slipstream hubs and there was about five of them throughout the galaxy, and that's actually how Voyager got back to Earth, was through a quantum slipstream.
Okay, so one thing the next thing I wanted to bring up was, I think what book referred to as, was it The Blast?
I think it was The Blast.
I think they called it The Blast, and this happened about 150 years prior to present episode, when I guess all the lithium went unstable and ended up blowing up the entire Federation fleets. Or all the fleets, all their ships, and essentially what we find out at the end of the episode with the guy who was at the start of the episode with the bird clock, you know, he only knows of two Federation ships operating within his sectors or his sensor range, which is some, you know, 30 some sectors. So,
which I do believe a sector is just a solar system, for reference. So yeah, that about 30 about solar systems.
Because, and you know, that's all he can scan because his long range sensors are knocked out. So you would think that with as much as Starfleet and the Federation used dilithium, with how smart the human race is portrayed in the show and how smart the Vulcans are and every other species, you would find out that dilithium is not a suitable power supply for your warp engines.
Well,
and even to the point where, you know, how did everything blow up all at once?
I don't know. And I feel like they're going to explore it in the episode. But there is actually prior Star Trek lore to back it up. So if you recall, in The Next Generation, there was an episode where Data reached out, was playing with something, and somebody responded on comms, is anybody out there? And he ended up responding yes, and it turns out there was like an 8-year-old girl from a planet who had an unstable planet. There was lots of volcanic activity, and they were violating the Prime Directive by talking to her because they did not know about warp travel. But they were investigating why planets were exploding, and another plot point was Wesley was put in charge of it. It was his first mission that he was put in charge of. You know, he had to gather his team. It was one of the Wesley episodes as well. And they figured out that they have huge deposits of dilithium in these planets. And when dilithiums become certain point and become unstable, they explode and actually blow up entire planets. So it's a very unstable element. Based off of that episode. So there is prior knowledge or forehand that dilithiums become unstable, and they have devastating effects if they do become unstable. It's just not something that they really explored a lot, because part of, you know, that's part of the reason why Scotty freaks out on Geordi when they meet for the first time, and he looks at the dilithium crystals because he thinks they're about to fracture, and if they fracture, the whole ship goes, you know, kaboom. But I don't get where they talked about it destroyed subspace. That doesn't make sense, and that's kind of new. The only thing that I know of that destroys subspace is the Omega particle. Necessarily, he meant
subspace. I was just thinking like subspace relays and subspace communication devices, so that way they're not able to reach out.
I don't know. I thought he was
Federation frequencies. That's kind of how I took it. Now, if that's the case, I don't know.
I was thinking of back to Voyager, because during Voyager, they introduced something called the Omega Particle and the Omega Initiative. And it was actually discovered around the time of the original series, you know, and Discovery's time frame, where it was a new energy source to power their warp ships. But it was so unstable that a single molecule exploded, one, destroyed an entire station, but destroyed all of subspace in that star system, just a single molecule exploding. So they banned it and they suppressed all knowledge of it. And it was important because the destruction of subspace meant you cannot use warp speed. Warp technology was completely dependent on subspace. And if you destroy subspace, you cannot warp. And that's why I'm like, oh, shit. Okay, so if these things are destroying subspace, that means no warp-capable ship can travel anymore, you know? Because that was also another concern to Next Generation was that, you know, warp technology was destroying subspace and was making it hard to travel. And you saw that in Season 6 of Next Generation, I think.
Okay.
So they're actually going off of prior Star Trek knowledge in the season so far. And I am actually pleasantly surprised. I know you haven't been very high on them so far, but these two episodes have actually been my favorite episode so far of Star Trek Discovery thus far.
Wow, that's a
I know. A I know. It didn't entirely suck. So we're on a good start.
Didn't
so far.
Entirely suck. So what did you think of the ending where Brenham goes and meets the bird clock guy? And then he reveals all this information about, is that where it's revealed about temporal wars? And there's only two ships left in the Federation, at least in that sector. There might be other ships in other sectors, but he can't communicate with them due to communications and
yes,
long-range sensors being down.
So, yes. So another throwback to previous Star Trek, Star Trek Enterprise. We are, you know, this is the culmination of the temporal Cold Wars, which apparently no longer became a Cold War and became a full-blown conflict and multiple conflicts, given that he used it in the plural, temporal wars. So means that there was probably multiple of them. And
is that what plural means?
Yes. For those of you who have never been to primary school. But I'm curious to see how this goes, given that this technically does align with most prior history, to where you have great civilizations throughout history. They have great rises, but eventually something brings about the end of, you know, their civilization. For example, Rome was the last great example. When Rome fell, we had the Dark Ages, where we saw a lack of technological development. We saw a lack of civilized society. There was more return to baser times or more primitive times. And you're kind of seeing that now with the destruction of the Federation. And I think I put that in the notes for when we first saw that almost that bar when they walked in. It almost felt like the Wild West, you know, kind of what's going on. You got criminal organizations kind of running things on the markets. You got almost this Old West style free for all, no law, or anarchy kind of feel. So it's not bad, because when seeing that scene, when you understand what the Federation is supposed to be, and when you really watch the original series and you know how important freedoms is, individuality, that the principles that the Federation is supposed to stand upon is supposed to be a continuation of those from the U.S. Constitutions, the rights of man, the prior human declarations of, you know, great declarations, the Mars colony, the established, I don't remember what they call, but there is a rights of man for the Mars colonies. To see that moment, to see that these people are still kind of holding out hope, it actually did kind of have an emotional impact. And I thought it was actually a pretty good scene. And I just hope they don't fuck it up by making it too PC. This is another tangent. I felt like I've been tangenting this entire episode, but people try to make the claim that Star Trek's communist, and if anybody who has ever said that has never actually seen Star Trek. You know, if you watch the original series, they actually...
Or understand what communism is.
Yeah, that too. There are actually a lot of combatants or storylines between communists and not to say capitalist, but constitutionalism, individual rights and individual freedoms. And you see them in a lot of different episodes. And there was one where they literally just did it head on, to where it was a barbarian state between the comms and the Yanks. And it turns out that it was the remnants of the communists and the Yankees, which was, you know, Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were reciting the Constitution, but didn't know what it meant. But, you know, you still, you know, you saw these all the time with the original series. And I hope that they continue on that trend and not the the PC trend that we've been seeing.
Okay.
But what do you, what are your thoughts?
On what?
On that last scene.
I liked it. It was touching. It was, I liked both scenes with this guy because it was, the first one was intriguing. The second one at the end of the episode paid off. It was emotional without being over the top. And I think, in my opinion, it's the highlights of the episode.
Hmm.
Let's move on to episode two, Far From Home.
Okay.
Where we see, now this episode's Discovery focused, and you don't really, you don't see Brenham this episode until the very, very end. And pretty much it opens with everyone experiencing a G-force, as I'm throwing up the air quotes, a G-force blackout, because they explained it wasn't quite G-force, it was another type of force, but it acted like a G-force,
mm-hmm.
but stronger to the point where it caused them to pass out. And of course, Saru wakes up just in time and wakes up the rest of the bridge crew just in time so they can slow the ship's fall enough to survive the crash landing. And I, just to talk about the overall my overall thoughts on this episode, I like this one much better than the first one. I thought it was great to see Saru in command and take charge, and especially go toe-to-toe with, and I say toe-to-toe just like putting his foot down on Giorgio and making it clear he's the acting captain. You're on his ship. It's his rules.
Okay, hang on. I got a question real quick. This is completely tangenting off. Do you remember the scene with Giorgio when she was walking down the hallway with him and runs into the alien with the big eyes?
Yeah.
What happened to him? You never see him again. You never figured out what happened to him.
Well, she was talking with that chick from who originally came from the Enterprise, the chief security officer, the one who has to wear the metal breathing implants,
yeah.
because she can't breathe oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
She was with her, and then she went with Linus, I think is that character's name, somewhere else, but it ended up her sneaking off the ship instead of helping with repairs.
Right. But that was what kind of got me curious because
it sounded like the way she her
voice sounded like she wanted him, but the question she was asking was related to his visual spectrum, which kind of confused me to the point of it was just a total confusing.
Yeah.
Because we know that Georgia is not shy when it comes to her sexuality. So, yeah.
Yeah, but given that she's Taryn and from the Mirror Universe, you would think she wouldn't be too fond of other alien species, but maybe she has a wild side and likes to experiment with non-human species.
I don't know. Maybe he's got a bigger dick than humans. You never know. I mean, hell, Tasha was willing to boink a machine.
Well, she was all goofed up on laughing gas or whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
When they were all
drunk.
Their
oh,
shit.
Yeah, the drunk virus. I mean. Only if COVID was like that. Only if the coronavirus actually had the effects of drinking Corona. You know, almost like that episode. I mean, that's what it was. I mean, it got the crew drunk. Only if COVID or Corona. Yeah, the coronavirus could do that. Why don't we call it the coronavirus anymore? You notice that? We only call it COVID-19 now.
I don't know. You're tangenting. You're off topic.
I know, but still.
Get back on topic. Episode two. So the ship is in total chaos because they don't have any of their systems. They don't even have inner ship communications. They are kind of scrambling to get all their systems up. And we find out they got to get all their systems up before dark because the ice that they fell into is one of those creepy crawler ice where once it starts hitting the shade, the temperature drops so quick that the ice buildup is incredibly fast.
Mm-hmm.
So they're rushing against time. You know, we see Stemmons come out of the coma because he's somewhat improved, has to go into, as you mentioned, the cellular regeneration chamber. We see a lot of heart and determination with him in trying to do what he can in his battered state in order to get the systems in the ship operating. Because
mm-hmm.
going up into that Jeffries tube, I imagine he didn't finish that first cycle of cellular regeneration like Dr. Colbert told him to and explicitly told him to.
Yeah, I think you're right, given that when the ship started crashing, he started bleeding out again while in the Jeffries tube, so probably.
So we see a lot of determination and just how much will kind of gets him motivated and going then. And it was probably part of the badgering with What's-Her-Face, who's, I can't, her name slips my mind right now, but she is probably one of the best parts of the show right now, because I feel like she's the most relatable character to me, because she is pretty much me with no filter.
Oh, the engineer?
Yeah.
Oh, the, yeah, like, just nothing but sarcastic quips.
Yeah, like, as I mentioned, when the scene when they're in engineering and the guy is cleaning up the spore drive, he's like, my name's Gene. She's like, I forgot. I was like, that's pretty much me. Otherwise, I would have said, didn't ask, don't care. That would have been me, but she has the same vibes that I do. And so I feel like she's the most relatable character.
She almost has that Chandler Bing kind of feel to it. That sarcastic quips, but they're not real, like, just like the subtle, perfect sarcastic quips at the right time to where it's, I'm not entirely sure where I'm going with it, but she has that real Chandler Bing vibe to it.
Yeah, those one-liners.
Mm-hmm. Just nailing the one-liners.
Yeah, she's one of my favorite characters so far in this show. Mm-hmm. Just, like I said, she just, it's like me in female form.
Yeah, or just you. Hey, I thought that was funny.
You thought it was funny.
Hey, the audience might think it was funny too. You never know. No. But, you know, I like that this episode had a bit more character development. You know, you're starting to get more interactions with the crew. I don't know who is the name of the helmsman, the other chick who, not the redhead, but the, I don't know what her name is, but you're starting to see, you know, more just time and interactions with her. She's getting a bit more story or camera on shot, camera action.
She's more screen time.
Yes, thank you.
The word you're looking for.
Thank you. She's getting a bit more screen time. It seems like the other characters are starting to get a little bit more screen time. And I feel like we're going to start getting into where I feel like the first two seasons were pretty much just going to be build up to what this season's supposed to be or to this storyline that they wanted to do. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like going into the future was where they always wanted to go with Discovery so they can kind of do their own thing there.
Owasakin,
is that her name?
That's her last name. Joanne's her first name. The other Helms girl.
Okay.
Navigation. I don't know what her name.
Damn, that's a hard name. Okay.
Yeah, it's Owasekun.
Yeah, Owasekun. Yeah, that sounds about right. Close enough.
So, yeah, that's who you're thinking of.
I don't know. I hope that they get
see some more screen time with them.
Yeah, I just hope that they get, you know, more time to develop the crew, the characters, get more of that emotional feel, unlike that what they had with season two, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's one of those things, and you really learn a little more about Tilly too, that, you know, especially when her and Saru go out and try to find civilization, try to figure out some information and you to find equipment or some mineral that they need in order to repair the internal communication, so they go into the local civilization.
Yeah.
Just their conversations that she's having, that she talks a lot when she's scared, and Saru, who, you know, knows she's scared, is just kind of like, do you right now, but when we get to civilization, when you're scared, you gotta hide that.
Right, and she does.
We're Starfleet, yeah, for the most part.
Yeah, and I love how the social awkwardness kind of saves the day. Tilly's, again, Tilly's kind of the highlight of the show for me, because to where the engine, I don't remember her name, the engineer more relates to you. I feel like Tilly's more related to me, to where I have that social awkwardness to where I don't know exactly when to shut up. I'm probably smarter than I seem like I make it out to be, but
that's questionable.
You never know, but but there are times where it's like, God damn, that was funny. Like, every now and then you do something real funny.
Yeah.
So, or, you know, you have those, you have your moments. So I feel like Tilly's a little bit more related to me, and that's why I very much enjoy Tilly's character.
Okay. I get what you're putting down. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what else there is to talk about. We see some more of that programmable matter when Saru and Tilly get to the bar. They end up finding some big bad kind of like cartel drug lord type thing. And that actor is actually, I like that actor because he's from some good shows. And I think he's done some movies. I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but he definitely has a face. There's a show Mom used to watch called Median with,
God,
I can't even think of her name.
I know the show.
Yeah, and it was with oh gosh, what, I can't think of her name. It'll come to me in a second as I Google it.
Yes, I was gonna say we have this thing called the internet where we can search information instantaneously.
Because it has Patricia Arquette. There, God, that was bugging me. She played in Little Nicky, and she did a lot of movies. But let me see who. The guy who played her husband.
Oh, yeah. That's the chick from Little Nicky?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I never put that connection together. She just really? Got so much. Well, she got so much older, and I guess glasses really do make a difference.
Yeah, I think it's Jake Weber or Weaver.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, she got old.
So he plays the husband in that show, and he, you know, I liked it. I'm hoping he's kind of the big baddie of this episode, because as an actor, I like him playing in shows like Median, and he was in Dawn of the Dead, Meet Joe Black. What else was he in? As I'm looking at his IMDb, oh, he was in the Midway. He was in the war film Midway, also.
Oh yeah, okay.
So I'm seeing he's in a couple episodes throughout season 3. So look forward to seeing him again, because I do like him as an actor.
And I'm well, we'll see if he survives.
Sort of antagonist. Well, I just kind of spoiled it because I said he's in a couple more episodes throughout season 3. So,
oh, all right. Well, I guess.
And you kind of infer that he's going to, given, you know, you don't see him die on screen. They kind of send him off into the
But you kind of expect
the sunset of the planet. Yeah, you don't expect him to live, but I've already spoiled a little bit that he's going to show up.
I don't know. I kind of hope that the Orions kind of become that main villain. I'd like to see the Orions play a more prominent role.
Well, maybe he reports to the Orions.
Could be. I mean, it seems like, you know, because when the Orions, or when they were in the first episode, when they went to that Orions market, one, I had throwback or flashbacks to Altered Carbon, very similar to Altered Carbon. Two, they were talking about the drones, that they were under arrest and that they were, you know, they were very specific about ID, and they were more, it seems like they're becoming more of a formalized governmental structure more than a criminal organization. And maybe that they could be becoming or transition, or perhaps that they filled that vacuum of power left by the Federation, and kind of, and since because they were that black market, they were able, you know, people went to them for providing their materialistic needs, and maybe they're becoming the new power throughout the quadrant, or at least multiple
maybe
sectors.
I was taking that Book was kind of a legitimate like runner or delivery man, and he, and because Brenham didn't have the identification tags for that group or company, that's why they didn't want to let her in. I you know, look forward to, maybe we'll find out more information on what exactly that organization is, and how legitimate or crime syndicate-y
it is. Cargo. Yeah, and then again, they were still just killing people left and right.
So, yeah, it's interesting to see, especially after that chase scene and then the big eel.
Yeah, and apparently Andorians are the stormtroopers of the Star Trek universe, because they can't hit shit to save their life.
Well, there's only one there, but, you know.
No, all those troops were Andorians.
Were they?
Yeah, they were all blue.
I don't remember. They were wearing, like, white get-ups, so I don't remember, or gray get-ups or something like that.
Yeah. But it was interesting. So, they went with the old school original series Andorians, not the newer.
I was gonna say they looked Enterprise design. Their design looked a little different, less, or I was gonna say more rugged along the face. Like they had more like bone structure or something. You know, kind of like Klingon-y, how they would have that that ridge skull. Line. Yeah, that enlarged skull on the top of their head. Like you see, like their cheekbones are more.
Right, could have Klingon blood in his DNA. I mean, there was in Enterprise, they talked about how, what was his name? Gordon? Was it Gordon? It was they had a crewman something, I can't remember his name, but he was from the future, who was kind of Median from the temporal cold war, and when they analyzed his DNA, he had, you know, several, you know, multiple different alien species DNA, you know, intermingled, including Vulcan. So,
yeah,
you know, it could have been that he had some Klingon blood, or that there was so much intermingling with the Federation that, you know, we're starting to see more cross species
breeding.
Banging, yeah.
Breeding,
that's good. Breeding works, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just noticed their design looked a little different. That was something else I was going to bring up because, like I said, I think in Enterprise or in one of the shows, it was like someone was painted blue and had put, you know, dyed their hair white or put on a white wig with two antennae sticking out. This one, you know, they messed with their bone structure and their cheek structure to give them more of a slightly different look.
Yeah.
So I will ask you, okay, overall, give us your final thoughts on these first two episodes.
Overall, I actually thought they were pretty good. I liked that they stuck with a lot of prior Star Trek knowledge and Star Trek lore. I liked that they kind of kept it, you know, fairly consistent, you know, with prior knowledge, and they introduced a lot of new characters. I am concerned that they're going to go, you know, multiple love triangle routes or whatever with the Burnham and Book angle, and I kind of hope they don't.
Yeah, that now that Tyler's gone, she's got to bang somebody else.
I know, right? She's going to be the Riker of the Discovery universe.
Yeah, or the Kirk.
Yeah, he's got to have somebody who just bangs everybody. It's just tradition. Yeah. And
might as well make it a female for once.
Yeah. Well, no, Jadzia from Deep Space Nine.
Oh yeah. Well, that's a little bit of a different color, given that her species lived such a long time, and she was male and then female and whatnot.
Yeah, but still, I mean, still, she was not shy about it.
So overall, you think season three has gotten to you a good start?
Yeah, it's off to a good start. It's off to a much better start than seasons one and two. A lot of humor. I like the humor. Yeah. I was laughing the entire time. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it continues. But then again, we're still early, so a lot of episodes left to disappoint.
Yeah, I didn't care too much for the first episode. It was just one of those things where we had a lot of questions like, okay, what planet is this out of the time? And it just felt like it took a really long time, or felt like a long time, just to get some of those answers out of Book or out of other people. And, you know, eventually he put two and two together that she's from the past and that she's a time traveler. The same thing happens in episode two, where Median Dad, I don't know his character's name, but he puts two and two together that because Saru doesn't know some of the stuff and doesn't understand this one language, given that he's supposed to be a Starfleet captain, that he's also a time traveler. So
yeah,
just one of those things where
smart outlaws,
yeah,
smart cowboys.
Yeah. Pretty smart, but still managed to get their ass kicked by Georgia.
Mm-hmm. But it does seem like Georgia is going to fit in pretty well in this universe.
Yeah. So overall, I'll say that first season didn't get off to the great start. It kind of stumbled a little bit, our first episode. And then the second episode felt much better. I was much more into it, much more intrigued. We kind of got some of the same information from the second episode that we did in the first episode. But it was kind of good to learn about, the blast and programmable matter and even the portable transporters that we see in the first episode and the second episode. I find it weird that those are so easily tracked, but it is what it is.
Mm. And it's so weird that overall, I can't track trace in water. Like, why? But why is that?
Yeah, that's something I never thought of, is transporting someone in or out of water. It's always been on a surface, you know, normal, not within another state.
Yeah, I mean, that just brings up a lot of questions, too. Why wouldn't they? What happens to the water? Does the water materialize inside them, or do they, when they materialize, do they push the water out around them? And does it, I don't know, does it occupy the same space, or does it just?
Well, you could ask the same questions. What happens to the air that's occupying the space when you transport? Just typically, is it pushed aside? Is it, so like a vacuum is created and then you fill that vacuum? Do they take the air and kind of use it when they rematerialize?
Yeah, so but air's less dense. So it's not because as...
the molecules are more are spread further apart, but still, I mean...
Well, that's what density means. That's what density is, yes.
I'm well aware of what density means.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just make sure. The, I don't know. It's weird, you know, because they talk about how they can materialize in solid matter. Because they talked about it in season two when they talked about a near transporter and they joked, Deanna joked, or didn't joke. She's like, it's weird. For a second, I thought I was in that wall. And Worf was like, you were. Because it's the near warp transport's different. I don't know why, but I guess it is. But, you know, you can materialize in solid matter. So, I mean, it's like...
I don't know. It's I'm curious. I doubt we'll ever get an explanation on it, but...
Probably not.
Just to figure out more on it. But overall, a better start than I thought we were going to see to season three. I don't expect it to hold, though, just from some things I've heard about the show. So
I don't know. I'm curious to see what they're going to do as... story arc wise for the season, if they are going to do a story arc or if they're just going to do episodically and start to transition.
You know what I see happening is Brenham and Discovery are going to try to rebuild the Federation.
And that's kind of the direction I'm thinking it's going to go into, but you know, what's going to be their main opposition? You know, these outlaws.
It'll be these syndicates and outlaws and probably the Orion crew and whoever else.
But I mean, it's like they're so outdated technologically speaking. I mean, they're even saying that the technology is just archaic. What can one ship Discovery do that to make the difference?
Well, I think there's two things. One, I think they still have the ability to jump, or they can maybe figure out with futuristic technology the ability to jump. Two, I don't necessarily mean that they're going to go clean up the streets with this 900-year-old ship, just that they're going to kind of round up the Federation ships that are still out there and get organized, fix some of these long-range sensor arrays, get it in long-range sensor arrays. I'm just repeating myself. And just make it so that way communication within the galaxy is a lot easier.
Hmm. So essentially, they're going to start over.
Not really cleaning up the streets, but it's just like, okay,
building a coalition of.
And now you got to rebuild the Federation.
Yeah. I mean, they could go just
picking up recruitment, picking up, you know, and just maybe not building ships, but just communicating better with the ships that exist and the crews that exist.
Yeah. I don't know. So I think that
if there are any, because it has been 150 years. So the two ships that the bird guy mentioned that he could track, they might not even be ran by Federation crew members, because someone in the bar did mention that. Okay. Yeah. We see you have a Federation ship. That doesn't mean you're a Federation crew. You know, anyone could be flying that ship.
Right. I don't know. I think that the Enterprise would be the good show to kind of be the baseline for building a coalition. I feel like they're going to go on a similar path to where they're just going to kind of explore, see what's going on, and try and find all the friendly species that they can and just kind of build a coalition until they're strong enough to where they can get a chartered Federation like they had again, you know, just continue building up their allies. And that's kind of what Janeway does in really several episodes that she's going through the Delta Quadrant on Voyager, is meet friendly people, trade where you can, build alliances, and then just keep building.
Yeah. Well, we have 4 more episodes. No, that doesn't sound right. 6 more episodes that we're talking about this. So
this season?
Yeah.
There's only 8?
Like,
are they still
podcast conversations? Because we'll have 2 an episode.
Right. Okay. Have they finished
the season finale wrapped already. So
okay, good. So we'll get the whole season then.
Yeah. Awesome. So we will talk about it.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
kill it.
Punch it.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it,
hot
punch it.
Punch it, let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
So that is actually what we'll talk about next time on Deep Space High, is we will continue our discussion on season 3 of Star Trek Discovery with episodes 3 and 4 entitled People of Earth and Forget Me Not. So that's what we have to look forward to. Maybe we'll get some more answers on what the over, since Discovery is big on this whole season arching plot line. I'm hoping they will kind of establish that in the next two episodes and we could talk about it here.
Yeah, I am actually a little bit curious, you know, with the Federation gone, what happened to Earth?
It's probably still there.
Probably, but how's the people? Are the people still there? You know, is it a unified Earth? Is it a destroyed Earth? Is it a, how, you know, what's the state of Earth given that it was the focal point of the Federation and Starfleet?
We'll find, I hope we'll see if we find out, because I won't say we will find out. We don't know.
Well, so, I'm assuming in the episode People of Earth, they would, you know, presumably go back to Earth.
We'll see.
All right. Well, we'll find out. And you'll
we'll
find
see,
out.
I don't want to look at the description. So I'm just kind of, whenever I plop down to watch the episode, that'll be the first time I'm experiencing or seeing anything about the episode.
All right. Well, we will find out next episode. And I guess so will you guys. So be sure to tune in. I guess that'll do it for this week's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening to Deep Space High. And be sure to join us next time as we continue our discussion on Star Trek Discovery.
And don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High and hashtag Tacos and Trek. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook. On Facebook, we are Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews. And on Instagram, we are Deep Space High Podcast. If you follow either of those platforms or both of those platforms, you can stay up to date with our latest announcements whenever I remember to post them.
Yes, and if you like what you heard and you want to hear more, please give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. It really helps with the algorithms, and it really helps get the viewership out and helps, you know, boost our audience. And, you know, we – sorry, I thought you were going to say something.
I was, and it's going to say, you know, I'm thinking this, and it just sounds like you're reading what I wrote, and you're not really sure why we want 5-star ratings to come out there.
Well, I know why. I'm just trying to figure out that I can never figure it out. I mean, I struggle with it every time we do this, but it's like,
I know,
how exactly
episode,
do the algorithms...
Like, you sound like you're not sure because you say algorithms and you just... You
I don't well, no. Does anybody really know how the algorithms work to help boost the... I mean...
Yeah, the more downloads you get, plus all the... If you get 5-star ratings, it boosts you in the charts. And if you get boosted in the charts, you get more visibility when people go to the iTunes store or maybe... or the Apple Store, whatever it's called now, and on Spotify. So yeah, that's why we want to see some 5-star reviews. We want to get up there. We want to keep the show going and grow.
Yep. And we want to get better as well as we continue to grow. So leave a review when you're on Apple Podcast and tell us how we're doing. You know, let us know. Give us shit when we mess up because we do it all the time.
5 stars only. Anything less, you can email us.
Yes. And where can they email us at?
DeepSpaceHighPod@gmail.com.
All right. Well, now you know. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to our wonderful shit show. I am Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And remember, live long and prosper.